Thank you. అష్టోత్తరశత శ్రీ శ్రీమాన్ భక్త సిద్ధాంత సరస్వతి మహర్షి శీల ప్రభుపాదుకి ఆనందపొడి వైష్ణవ బృందకి, మామాచారి శ్రీ హరిదాస్ ఠాకూర్కి, ప్రేమ సౌహో శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్త బృందకి, శ్రీ శ్రీ రాధాకృష్ణ గోప గోవినాథ శ్యామకుంఠ రాధాకుండగిరి గోవర్ధానికి, బృందావన్ ధామ్కి, మాయపూర్ ధామ్కి, మధురపురి ధామ్కి, జగన్నాథ్పురి ధామ్కి, ద్వారకాపురి ధామ్కి, ఇందుమాయికి, రమణమాయికి, తులసిదేవికి, భక్తిదేవికి, సామవేద భక్త బృందకి గౌరవ ప్రేమండి. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. Namo Mishupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutare Shri Bhaktivedanta Swami Namine. Namaste Sarasudevam Duryavani Pradyarini Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashyate Drishadarini. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం అజ్ఞానతిమిరాంధస్య జ్ఞానాంజనశలాకయ చక్షురుమిళితాం యేన తస్మై శ్రీగురవే నమః. శ్రీచైతన్యమనోభీష్టం సవితాం యేన భూతలే స్వయం రూపగదా మహ్యం దదాదిం సుభదాందియం. వందేహం శ్రీగురు శ్రీయుతాపదకమలం శ్రీగురుం వైష్ణవాంశ్చ శ్రీరూపం సాంద్రజాతం సహగణ రఘునాథాన్వితం తం సజీవం సాద్వైతం సావధూతం పరిజనా సహితం కృష్ణ చైతన్య దేవం శ్రీరాధా కృష్ణపదాం సహగణ లలితాం శ్రీ విశాఖాన్వితాంశ్చ. హే కృష్ణ కరుణా సింధో దీనబంధో జగల్పదే గోపేశ గోపికాకాందాం రాధాకాంత నమోస్తుతే. తప్తగాంజన గౌరాంగీ రాధే వృందావనేశ్వరి వృషభానుసృతే దేవి ప్రణమామి హరిప్రియే. వంశకల్పతరుభ్యశ్చ కృపాసింధూభ్యేవ చ పతితానాం పావనేభ్యో వైష్ణవేభ్యో నమో నమః. కృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభో నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్త వృంద. హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే, హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే, హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే, హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే, హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే, హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే. ఓం పార్థాయ ప్రతిబోధితాం భగవదం నారాయణేన స్వయం వ్యాసేన గ్రథితాం పురాణమునినం మధ్యే మహాభారతం అద్వైతామృతవర్షిణిం భగవతిం అష్టాదశాధ్యాయినిం అంబ త్వామనుసంధదామి భగవద్గీతే భవద్వేషిణిం. నమోస్తు వ్యాస విశాల బుద్ధే ఫుల్లారవిందాయత పత్రనేత్రం ఏన త్వయా భారత తైలపూర్ణం ప్రజ్వాలితో జ్ఞానమయ ప్రదీపాం. ప్రపన్న పారిజాతాయ తోత్రవేత్రైకపాణయే జ్ఞానముద్రాయ కృష్ణాయ గీతామృతదుహే నమః. సర్వోపనిషదో గావో దుగ్ధా గోపాలనందన పార్థో వల్స సుధీర్భోక్త దుగ్ధం గీతామృతం మహల్. వసుదేవసుతం దేవం కంసజానురమర్దనం దేవకీ పరమానందం కృష్ణం వందే జగద్గురుం. భీష్మద్రోణతటా జయధ్రగజల గాంధార నీలోల్పల శల్యగ్రాహవదీ కృపేణ వహని కర్ణేన వేలాకుల. అశ్వత్థామ వికర్ణ ఘోరమగర దుర్యోధనావర్తిని సోతీర్ణ ఖలు పాండవైరణ నది కైవర్తక కేశవా. പാരാശര്യവജസ്സരോജമലം ഗീതാർത്ഥഗന്ധോൽക്കടം നാനാഖ്യാനകകേസര ഹരികഥ സംബോധനാബോധിതം ലോകേ സജ്ജനഷൽപദൈരഹരഃ പേബീയമാനം മുദാം ഭൂയാദ്ഭരതമംഗജം കലിമല പ്രധ്വംസിന ശ്രേയസീം മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കം ലംഘയതി ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം യ ബ്രഹ്മാ വരുണേന്ദ്രരുദ്രമരുതം സ്വന്വന്തി ദിവ്യൈ സവേ വേദൈ സംഗപദൈ ക്രമോപനിഷദൈ ഗായന്തി യം സമഗാഃ ധ്യാനാവസ്ഥിത തദ്ഗതേന മനസാ പശ്യന്തി യം യോഗിനോ യസ്യാന്തം ന വിദുഃ സുരാസുരഗണൈ ദേവായ തസ്മൈ നമഃ. ഓം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമഃ. ശ്രീമതി രാധികായേ നമഃ. സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ. സോ വി വാർ ഡിസ്കസിംഗ് the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita last Saturday, and we have seen before that Krishna begins Bhagavad Gita with Karma Yoga. As I said before, Karma has been given a very unique position in Bhagavad Gita because Krishna begins with Karma Yoga. So naturally, in the third, fourth and fifth chapter, Krishna has analyzed Karma Yoga from all angles. And Krishna also, because all living entities by nature have a desire to perform karma. Well, no one is free from karma. That is the nature of the human mind. Because of the various vasanas or propensities in our mind, we have a tendency to engage in karma. We are not unable to withdraw ourselves from karma. That is our difficulty. And because it is like that, and Krishna knew that this tendency to engage in action is very strong in the human species. Because at the time of creation, Brahma, when he created the human society, he has, in the Bhagavatam it is mentioned, that karma paraha, always desiring to engage in karma. Rajodigaha karma paraha. Karma is there in us. That is the nature of the rajogunam. Rajogunam means mood of passion. That mood of passion develops into karma. That is why it is so much desire to engage in karma. Otherwise, how come that there is a living entity who has come to this world in order to, not knowing his final destination, not even realizing where he came from, nor he has any idea where he is going to after leaving the body. The only thing that is sure is that he has to leave the body one day. But the fact is that even not knowing the destination, he is absorbed in engaging in karma in this world. That is the beauty of this, the nature of karma. So that's why in the Bhagavatam it is said, Rajodigaha karma varaha. Karma is bound to be there in every individual and every living entity. Dukheja sukhamaninam. Rajodigaha karma varaha. Dukheja sukhamaninam. What is the result of karma? Result of karma is either happiness or distress. Isn't it? So distress, happiness and distress is coming from karma alone. Actually, a person who is transcendental to all the activities, he is situated in a position where he is not affected by the modes of nature. But when the rajogunam is very predominant in a person, naturally the immediate reaction will be for that karma varaha dukheja sukhamaninam. That he will engage in so many kinds of karma, different kinds of karma, karmam, akarmam, vigarmam, all kinds of karmam. He would engage in, and the result of that will be dukheja sukhamaninam. That actually Krishna says, you do not get any sukham or happiness from karmam. What you get ultimately is only dukham. That is the conclusion of all the shastrams. So Sudeva Goswami says this, Vedavyasa Maharshi says that, Krishna also says this, and all the great sages will say the same thing. The result of any karmam in this world is ultimately distress. Dukham. Dukham is coming. But then why people still continue to do it? Because dukheja sukhamanina. that even when dukham comes, he is thinking it is sukham. This is the beauty of Maya. Maya's business is like this, to make us realize that even that dukham, what one is experiencing here, it can be perceived as sukham. So that is why Srimad Bhagavatam, it is mentioned, Rajodigaha karma varaha dukheja sukhamaninam. Dukham will be taken as sukham. That is, distress will be taken as happiness in this real world. It is like that, because you can see also many times people, very, very hard working people, very hard, who engage in a lot of karmic activities in this world, they work 5 days a week, and then as soon as the weekend comes, they want to escape from the work. Why? Because they had enough of it by then. Because no one becomes happy by engaging in karma. That is also a fact. But at the same time, he's not able to come out of it. So after 5 days hammering on it, then 6th and 7th day you want to escape from that. But as soon as the 2 days are gone, the weekend is gone, he is in a rush to get back to karma again. This is the nature of the human mind. Why it is like that? Because the mind is accepted certain things as reality. And on the basis of that, mind is making the judgment. And therefore, it is the mind that is behind everything. It is not nothing else. It is just the mind that is pushing a person to engage in all kinds of activities. Rajodigaha karma varaha dukheja sukhamanina. So naturally, some days when you work so hard, and one person has been busy with so many things during the day, and in the evening when he comes home, he is thinking still that I had a good day because I have been working very hard whole day. This is the happiness he is getting from that. So then he sits on his chair, and although everything did not happen according to his desire, because he has not engaged in karma without expecting any results from that, he was constantly aware, every second he has engaged in the karma, he was expecting the results of that. But when the results did not come as he expected, then he says, he becomes very philosophical at that time. That is when he turns around and says, after all, that is life, isn't it? He says like that. So, Rajodigaha karma varaha dukheja sukhamaninam. So this is why karma is a very complicated subject in the Bhagavad Gita as well as in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And therefore Krishna has given a very detailed review of the karma, different kinds of karma, how it binds a person to this world, and how to come out of karma by engaging in karma, which is karma yoga, that's also has been discussed. So the 3rd, 4th and 5th chapter, Krishna finished with the karma, the law of karma and the science of karma yoga. That was discussed in those chapters. Immediately after that, Krishna realized that to come out of karma, one has to control the mind. And without the control of the mind, one cannot come out of it. It is the mind that is causing all these activities of the mind, of the body, isn't it? Body is engaging in so many activities from morning to night. Why? Because the mind is behind it. So in order to bring that mind under control, Krishna wanted to explain the process of yoga sadhana, all the different kinds of yogic processes. And that is how we have moved on to Ashtanga Yoga system in the 6th chapter. Because of the necessity to control the mind, which causes the karma to be performed, unless and until one gets a full, complete control of the mind, his spiritual life will not go further. And therefore, in order to explain that, Krishna started discussing in the 6th chapter, the importance of yoga sadhana. Yoga sadhana means particularly Patanjali Maharshi's Ashtanga Yoga system. Yamam, Niyamam, Asanam, Pranayamam, Pratyaharam, Dharana, Dhyanam, Samadhi. 8 kinds of yoga systems. So out of these 8 kinds of systems, we mentioned about that in the verse number 11, that is where we have to read from. Verse 11, 6th chapter. Shuchau deshe pradishtapyam siram asanam alpana na tyachridam na nati nijam chelajina kushottaram. Shuchau deshe pradishtapyam. So these are the requisites or requirements for performing yoga sadhana or different kinds of yoga system. That one has to find a place first of all to sit. A place which is clean underneath a banyan tree, or on the banks of a river, somewhere when it's flat. and then he should keep his seat there properly to be to situated. A blanket, a cloth, a deer skin, or tiger skin, darbhagras, any of them can be used to sit for meditation. And it should be slightly warmer also. Then when one is seated like that properly in a proper place, then he can perform his sadhana or his spiritual activities.
Tatra ivagram manakratva yada jitendriya kriya upavishyasane yunjal yogamalpa vishuddhaim.
Then the activity starts. One has to control one's senses very rigidly. One has to control. And then he has to stop the mind going away in different directions, running after sense enjoyment or any other material activities. Mind will bring a lot of material activities as soon as one starts the meditation process. But all that has to be controlled, and then the mind has to be brought under control, and then you should be seated in that way. Then before you close your eyes while sitting in that position, the external world should disappear from your mind. The external world should not come back to you again. At the same time, in order that to happen, you have to have a very, very strong and intense desire for self-realization. If that is not there, this is not going to happen. With complete tamogunam inside the mind, if you sit for meditation, all that what you will see is everything in the external world. But in order to come to this position where one can control the mind so nicely, strongly, one has to have that burning desire inside for self-realization. That, and simultaneously, one has to pray to Krishna that it should bring me closer to the spirit soul, rather than or take me out from the consciousness of the material body. Similarly, if like this, when all these material desires have gone away and spiritual desires are very strongly burning inside, then when that samskar on that purification has happened inside, then he is ready for dhyanam or meditation.
Samam kaya shirogrivam dharayanna jalam sthira samprekshan asigagram swam visheshcha anavalogayan.
There are various kinds of asanas mentioned there. In the asanas you can see advertised often. Palmasanam, Siddhasanam, Sostiyasanam, and so many asanas mentioned. So different kinds of postures to sit for the yoga practice. And it is good to sit in any of them to control the body also. But in whichever position one sits, one should be very sit and rigid and erect and steady. And that is important. One should not sit in a way that it will make him to fall down into tamagunam again. One who has sit like that, then the process is discussed there, how to bring the vision in between the middle of the two eyebrows and to become concentration there and bring concentration vision there. At the same time, completely in peace. That when the mind is under control, there will not be any external thoughts, any thoughts from outside. But that in order to get to this stage, to bring the mind under control, because you may wonder that Ashtanga Yoga system talks about all these things. So instead of jumping into Ashtanga Yoga straight away, Krishna says you should first learn how to control the mind. If the mind has come under control, all the Ashtanga Yoga system gets a lot easier. It is the control of the mind that is the biggest obstacle on that path. Then, and how do we get this mind under control? And that is why pranayamam is used. Pranayamam is a process. Yamam, niyamam, asanam, pranayamam. That pranayamam is a process which brings the mind under control. You will see this pranayamam used by all the yogis to a very large degree. Very large degree they all use this pranayamam. Similarly, in deity worship also, all the pujaris who are very serious, intense about their deity worship, they use pranayamam. It has been trained like that from the early days in the Vidyapiram, where they go for the deity worship, to learn deity worship. In their schools, they are taught how to engage in deity worship. And in that process, pranayamam is one thing that's been trained for them to do. Because by controlling the prana inside, naturally the mind will also come under control. So pranayama has a relationship with the control of the mind. So when one who has practiced like that, so often when one goes to learn this Ashtanga Yoga system, for many months first he is trained how to control this breathing air or this air which goes in and out, which is known as Puragam, Kumbhagam and Rejagam. Puragam is the process by which you absorb the air inside. After, through one nostril, air is pulled inside and then the other nostril is closed and the air is kept inside for a certain amount of time, which is known as Kumbhagam. Puragam is the process by which you bring it in and holding the air is Kumbhagam. And through the other nostril, you allow the air to go out and that is known as Rejagam. So this pranayama process is a very scientific process by which all the nerves in the body gets purified, and the result of that is when the nerves are purified, the thoughts that come through our mind and senses and everything gets controlled. They automatically stops. In other words, their activities diminish, which means that mind comes under control. So this is the process of Ashtanga Yoga system. And this Ashtanga Yoga system, the first thing that they are told is about pranayama. Pranayama helps them to bring the mind under control. So when the mind is under control, then they can sit down for the asanams and dhyanam much later. So that is a normal process which should be learned under the guidance of a teacher.
Prashandalma vikatabhi brahmajari vrade sthidaha mana samyamyamachito yuktamasi idamalparaham.
When you start this meditation process, Krishna says here that some of the mind's arrows, or like Brahmastram, it has got a lot of Brahmastram. The mind has got a lot of arrows in its position. What kind of arrows? Lust, anger, greed, envy, jealousy, and also all other kinds of ignorance. For example, the mind will send different perceptions to you and it will start challenging you or all your effort to control him. That is the nature of the mind. So normally it is said that mind has a lot of arrows in its hand. It will start shooting one after the other, the arrows. And every time it shoots an arrow, you get shocked. Before you know, you are thinking that you are controlling the mind. And while you sit down and when you try to control the mind, suddenly the mind goes somewhere else. Before you know, it's gone. That is the... Everyone knows this, isn't it? I don't know. It's my experience is like, but I'm sure it's the same in most of the people. So that is the nature of the mind. Mind won't allow you, because one after the other, these things will come. It's a continuous flow of things. Patanjali says, yoga, chitta vritti nirodha. Chitta vritti means this. That continuous flow of things one after the other in the mind. So they have to come under control. They have to come under control. And therefore, chittavritti nirodham, or blocking that, is by yoga system. Patanjali says like that. So this whole cycle is meant only to do that, to get this mind under control. Now, when all the arrows that the mind has shot, it didn't work, then mind has got one last brahmastram in its hand. A very powerful weapon. What is that? Sleep. It will hit you with the sleep and then you collapse, you finished. Then you can't do anything after that. So out of the, otherwise in this material nature, with our material body, even after many hours of trying to practice the yoga system, if everything fails at the end, mind will win over us. And mind will control us eventually by this powerful weapon known as sleep. Then, as soon as one of these lust, anger, greed, or one of them comes to the mind, immediately mind will move. You lost the control. Therefore, Krishna says, out of all the things in this world, the most difficult thing to control is the mind. Nothing else. He says, you may think that winning a world war or something very... powerful in this world, or bringing a war, or bringing Wimbledon, or something like that is big. But Krishna says, no, none of them is big thing, he says. Krishna says, the greatest thing in this world you can win is control on your own mind. Therefore,
Krishna says, Durjayanam Aham Manam. Out of all these things, most difficult thing in this world to get over or to control is manasa or mind. And that is me, Krishna says. Durjayanam Aham Manam. Bhagavatam. So, like this, Krishna has given a very important place for this mind. And throughout Shastram, this is the only topic discussed, mind. This is our biggest problem also. This mind is our biggest problem. And that is what is discussed everywhere in all the Shastram. Particularly on the Jnanamargam, they discussed about this mind, how to get this mind under control. That as soon as mind loses its balance, immediately anger builds up inside and then the reaction starts from there. Body gets into action straight away. Then you have forgotten what purpose you have started the meditation and you go in a different direction. Therefore, in the brahmachari life, these things are given a lot of importance. Then before we begin the meditation process, the mind has to be controlled. Mana prashandalma vigadavi brahmachari vrade sthida mana sayamyamachitto yuktamasidamalparaham. Then there is a process of meditation mentioned in the Bhagavatam in two places. In two places it is discussed. One is in the third canto, another one is in the 11th canto. Kapila Vasudev, when he was speaking to Devahuti Devi, his mother, he gave her a way of meditation on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. On Krishna's four-handed form is meditated upon. How to get absorbed in the meditation. Later on, in the Ekadasha Skandam, in 11th canto also, while speaking to Uddhava, Krishna has given a process by which one can meditate on Krishna. So, dhyanam or this meditation is a very important process in spiritual life. If one can execute that properly, it is a very important process. So, therefore, everywhere you will find ittam tad dhyana yogi, that in this dhyana yogam, what Krishna has discussed, there is a slight difference in the third canto and the 11th canto. It's a slight difference. The process by which in Kapila Vasudev's Dhyana Yogam, Kapila Vasudev has not given lot of importance to the way you sit for the meditation. He says that if you simply sit down whichever way you like and absorb your mind in Krishna and Krishna's pastimes, particularly the childhood pastimes, that is the meditation process what Kapila Vasudev has discussed. In the Ekadasha Skandam, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, while speaking to Uddhava, Krishna has given the scientific process of performing the meditation or Dhyana Yoga. So, whichever way you do it, that whole process in detail discussed there, whichever way you do it, at the end, one has to come able to focus one's mind completely on Krishna without any movement from there afterwards. Once you start moving, you will lose the form inside. And to build up that form of Krishna inside, there is a specific process discussed there in the Bhagavad Gita. But once he goes through that meditation process, and if one gets fixed up in that, then he has crossed a big hurdle in his spiritual life. He has crossed a big hurdle. Because immediately after dhyanam, what comes is samadhi. Samadhi means fully fixed up in that condition which you were in dhyanam. That means no more falling down from that samadhi. Once you go into samadhi, you have gone over jagrat, sopnam and sushupti. That means these three states of existence which we discussed before, namely the vacant state, the dream state and the deep sleep. I mentioned this before, normally our nature is to float within these three, backwards and forwards. How to get out of this, that is called samadhi. Once you have crossed over these three states, it's called samadhi. So dhyanam is the last step where you will get over these three states of existence. And once you have successfully succeeded in getting the mind under control and able to perform this dhyanam properly, then you are qualified to be in samadhi afterwards. Because very soon after you have succeeded in dhyanam or meditation, you will fall into samadhi. So sometimes you will see great yogis and all that, when they move into samadhi state, sometimes they may not even know how long they have gone into samadhi. This is a very interesting thing. If you read the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, when Bharata Maharshi went into Gandaki River in Nepal, where he was executing his spiritual activities on the banks of the river Gandaki, where he was living there. He left, gave up his crown, everything. He was an emperor of the whole world, Bharata Maharshi. He went to the forest and started performing his austerities. At that time, what used to happen was, in Srimad Bhagavatam it is said, that when he goes into samadhi, sometimes he won't know for how long he is going to be in that samadhi. Sometimes days and days he used to be in samadhi. So what the problem was, that once as he taken to this activities, spiritual life, he has to perform what is known as Sandhyavandanam. Sandhyavandanam means the three times in the day, sunrise, middle of the day and sunset, three times, he has to perform three Sandhya, chanting the Gayatri, standing in the river. That is the system sannyasis and all others followed those days. They will stand in the river, in the water, up to the up to the hips. They will stand in the water and offer the water, tarpanam, to the sun god. And there they will chant the Gayatri. That was Sandhyavandanam. Three times a day they performed that. And it is mandatory for a sannyasi or personality like Bharata Maharshi to do that. So while doing that, this is compulsory to be done every day. Every day it should be done once you have reached that stage. But what happened was, when he goes into samadhi, he forgets, he can't do it because he has left this world. He is not in this world anymore. He is in the samadhi state, in the spiritual realized state. So sometimes for many days he will miss this process. He will miss it. And then when he comes back, he does not know how many days he has been away from this body. He has gone into samadhi for so many days, but when he comes back, he is not aware how many days he has missed the performing Sandhyavandanam. And Sandhyavandanam is compulsory. So then the question comes, and how do you account for it? What do you do? So there, in the Bhagavatam, there is a verse that... that in the Bhagavatam, while speaking about this, Sri Narada Maharshi told Vedavyas some things, that when you go into such a state, you can give up your the regulatory principles. Like today, we have accepted so many rules and regulations in our life, isn't it? So many rules and regulations we have accepted as a spiritual necessity in order to advance spiritually. One accepts different rules and regulations. Voluntarily, you have to accept it voluntarily. Not the four regulative principles alone. That is only to make us a human being. Just to make us a human being. But apart from that, we have certain spiritual commitments every day. To get up early in the morning, to bathe in the morning, to chant the holy name, and to engage in deity worship. And similarly, so many other commitments according to one's capacity, one accepts in spiritual life. So when you have accepted all these things, sometimes you may wonder also, how long do I have to execute all these things? Because it goes on and on and on every day. And then you are not sure when this can come to an end. This can come to an end at this point, when you go into samadhi state, when you don't fall back from there. It was then you are not responsible for that. Otherwise, in Krishna Karnamrita, Vilumangalam says about it, Sandhyavandana Bhadramastu Pade Mosnana Tubhyam Namo Bodeva Pidarascha Darpana Vidhau Naham Kshamo Kshamyadam. Vilumangalam was once sitting underneath the tree, and under Banyan tree, and sitting there, Swamiji went into samadhi like this. He went into sleep and then into samadhi. What was that? Sandhyavandana Bhadramastu Bhavado Bhosnana Dubhyam Namo. That when Vilumangalam sat there and he started thinking about Krishna. Vilumangalam Samadhi is like that, thinking about Krishna. That is Vilumangalam Samadhi. Vilumangalam does not go through any of these yoga systems to perform Samadhi. His Samadhi is absorption in Krishna. So he was so absorbed in Krishna that one after the other, different pastimes were coming through his mind, and the childhood, particularly the childhood pastimes in Vrindavanam, that is what has affected Vilumangalam so much. So while he was sitting like that, he went into samadhi. And Vilumangalam was a sannyasi as well. So because he was a sannyasi, this sannyasi is not getting up in the morning, bathing in the river or performing any spiritual activities. So what happened was, because he was such an elevated personality, all the personified form of these Sandhyavandanam, they came to see Villamangalam. Who all came? Sandhyavandanam came. Sandhyavandanam Devada. He's called the Adhishtadra Devada. Adhishtadra Devada means the predominating deity of Sandhyavandanam. He came to see Villamangalam. And who else came? The bathing, when we are bathing, there is a deity in relationship to that. It is called Snana Devada. A deity which allows you to bathe our body. And he is called Snana Devada. He came. And who else came? All the forefathers, representatives from the Pitraloka, they also came from the forefathers' world. They came. They all came to see Villamangalam. Villamangalam was sitting very comfortably and completely absorbed in his thoughts of Krishna. So when they came to see him, Villamangalam did not say anything to them. He sat down. He sat down and he was absorbed, and they all came and stand in front of them, front of him. Because he was a very elevated personality, he could see them all standing in front of him, one after the other. So at some point, Villamangalam said to them, "Who are you?" he said to them. So Sandhyavandanam said, "I am Sandhyavandanam personified. I have come to ask you something," he said. "Then who are you?" he said. He said, "I am forefathers, the personality from the Pitraloka, and I am Snana Devada." Like this, all three of them answered to Villamangalam. So Villamangalam says to him, Sandhyavandana Badramastu Bhavado Bho Snana Dubhyam Namo Bho Deva Pidarascha Darpanavidho Naham Kshama Kshamyadam. Sandhyavandanam, please wait. I have no time to talk to you now. Sandhyavandana Badramastu Bhavado. Sandhyavandanam has actually come to give his benediction to Villamangalam. That's what Sandhyavandanam said. "I want to give my blessings to you. As a sannyasi, I want to give you my, or bless you with all my power of blessings." Villamangalam says to Sandhyavandanam, "I will give you the blessing instead. I don't want your blessing." Sandhyavandana Bhadramastu Bhavado Bho Snana Dubhyam Namam. And to the Snana Devada again, Villamangalam says, "You also wait. I give you my blessings," he says. Bho Deva Pidarascha Darpana Vidho Naham Kshama Kshamyadam. And to Pitralokam, the demigods on the Pitralokam, to them also Villamangalam offers his blessings. And he says to them like this, Naham Kshama Kshamyadam. "Please forgive me. I apologize to all of you because I could not execute my daily activities which is meant to please you, the Sandhyavandanam, Pitradevadas and the Snanadevada. I know that you are not pleased, but I am helpless about it." Why? Yatra kvabi shuddha narada kulo tamsam hamsadvisham smaram smaramakam harami dadalam manye nakimanye namim. That yatra kvabi nishiddha yadava kulo tamsam. That unfortunately the jewel of Yadava race, who is the enemy of Kamsa, he is inside here. Kamsadvisham smaram smaramakam. That the moment I think about Krishna, the thoughts are coming and the pastimes are coming through my mind. Smaram smaram agham harami tadalam. That one after the other, nothing is disturbing me anymore. Manyena kvanyena meem. That I am not saying anything because I am unable to do any service to you. Like this, Villamangalam sent them back that day. Afterwards, they never turned back again to see him. So personalities like Villamangalam, when they go into samadhi, they are fixed up in that. And devotees as well, this is the samadhi state of the devotee. But the yogis who are practicing Ashtanga Yoga, they practice Ashtanga Yoga on that form of Krishna, which they meditate on, and they go into samadhi into that form. And so what I was saying before was, that once they move into dhyanam, and if dhyanam is perfected, then and you have won more or less the battle. So what is perfection of dhyanam means? Perfection of dhyanam means perfection of control of the mind. And this is the reason why mind is given so much importance in all the Vedic literature. Nowhere else you will find mind has been given such an importance So much importance to the mind. And if you ask anyone, where is this mind? Nobody knows where it is. This is the beauty of that. Somebody says it's here, somebody says it's there, somebody says it's somewhere else. But he is there, everybody agrees with that. So you see, within yourself there is someone whom you do not know, who is controlling you all the time, and you are unaware of his presence there, and you are completely under his control as well, all of us.
Yunjannevam sadalmanam yogi niyadamanasa shandim nirvana paramam malsamstham adhigacchadim.
Then, as soon as you get serious in this meditation, dhyanam process, you get stronger, you get more closer to Krishna. And what does that mean? As soon as you get closer to Krishna, you are freed from the material consciousness, isn't it? That material realization, material understanding of life, and material happiness, material distress, all of these things goes away at that point. Nothing will come back to you again to disturb you because of the close relationship with Krishna at that time. That also, he is so much fixed up in Krishna that the bliss that's coming from Krishna is start working in his mind constantly. And because of that bliss, Krishna is bliss absolute. Satyam, Jnanam, Anandam, as it is referred to. Eternity, blissful and knowledge, that is Krishna's identity. And that which is coming from Krishna simply engages the soul, is experiencing that. As soon as it's experiencing that, mind has no more control on that situation. And then he is in blissful existence.
Natyashnadasti yogosti, najayigandamanashnada, nadayadi sutmashilasya jagrado naiva charjunam.
That eating, sleeping, all these activities are the activities of the body. They are nothing to do with the soul. They are the activities of the body. This one has to be very conscious of. We have to always realize that many of the things what you do, what we do in this world, is only in relationship with the material, gross material body, nothing else. That, but as soon as you go into meditation, and once you go into samadhi, you will realize that all these sharira dharma means that when you are hungry, you want to eat. When you are tired, you want to sleep. And when you have lusty desires developing inside, you want to associate with the opposite sex. And you want to defend your life in this world. What are they? They are actually nothing but the activities of the body. They have nothing to do with the self. The soul is independent of all these things. But because of our, this is how we realize that how much we are absorbed in the body. As long as you are absorbed in the body, these are the four activities that is continuously going on.
Natyashnadasti yogosti, nachaigandamanasnada, nachadi sutmashilasyam.
So a yogi, there is no need for eating and sleeping. This is how they control. They have given up the identification with the body, and therefore all these activities also have come to a stop. Then, but the difficulty is this, that till you leave the body, you have to do it. That is another side to it. For example, even if you have gone to samadhi, because you won't have in the samadhi situation in a uninterrupted manner, often it will get interrupted and you will come back here sometimes. So because of that, that getting that samadhi, continuous samadhi, is the most difficult thing. That takes a longer time. Practice only. All by practice, nothing else. But till you get it, until this body is existing, you have to feed the body. You have to maintain this body. That cannot be given up overnight. That at least to a limited extent, it has to be done. The reason for that is that when you have accepted a material body and came to this world, as I mentioned before, there is a thing called prarabdha karma, which has decided that will determine how long this body should stay. So if you decide on your own that I'm not going to care about it, it's not going to work. Now the result will be that if you try to do injustice to this body, or what is to be maintained by the every individual, at least to the minimum requirement, so that one can execute spiritual life. If one does not do that, then the reaction will be, you will have to accept another body. Because when you leave this body, you have forced your own consciousness and did not accept Krishna's law of prarabdha karma. Often people get this understanding that if I came to come to Krishna consciousness, no karma follows me. That is not true. The reason is this. that Krishna consciousness has got the ability to get out of all the karma. There is no question about that. Bhakti process is such a powerful thing that by advanced devotee, a devotee who is well advanced in Krishna consciousness, karma does not affect him. There is no doubt about that. Because he has gone beyond the state of karma. He is so much absorbed in Krishna's pastimes and Krishna's consciousness is so absorbed in Krishna, no karma can touch him anymore. But prarabdham is by and large there. Krishna does not touch it. Normally he doesn't touch it. But the difficulty is this. Just because I become a devotee today doesn't mean karma has gone away. I become a devotee means I have taken to the process today. But I have not progressed enough that I have escaped from karma. That stage has not come yet. That stage only comes when one has reached that pure state of Krishna consciousness, pure devotee state of Krishna consciousness, where one is completely free from the bodily concept of life and completely absorbed in the service of Krishna. Up to that point, you have to respect all the other laws of karma. You cannot say that, I am not controlled by you. If you say like that, what will happen is your mind will engage you in all kinds of activities and which will create more karma. And that means your spiritual life, on the one hand, Krishna consciousness may be growing, but on the other hand, it will be brought down by the effect of karma also. So that is why one has to become aware that all these processes, what is discussed in the Bhagavad Gita, everything has an impact on one's own spiritual life. This is why it is mentioned that one has to purify one's own karma. If one simply thinks that I am a devotee now, I am chanting 16 rounds, I am following 4 regulative principles, I am not bound by karma anymore, that is an illusion. It is not so. You are not able to give up karma till you reach that state of consciousness, Krishna consciousness, where you are completely absorbed in Krishna's service to that extent, that you do not fall back from that. There is no more material activities for you. When you come to that stage, and then you can say that you are freed from the laws of karma. Up to that point, you are also subjected to the laws of karma as much as anyone else is in this world.
Yadha divo natyasnadasti yogosti na jaigandamanasnada na jadi sotmashilasya jagrago naivacharjanam. Then,
although we have to engage in this eating, sleeping, sex life, defense, all these things we have to do it. There is no doubt about that. But a yogi cannot afford to spend all his time in that. That is also there. That is the duty of a person who is absorbed in the bodily concept of life. He only has to plan one thing, how to keep the body nicely, isn't it? So that is his business. One who identifies oneself with the body. Yasya alpa buddhi, why Srimad Bhagavatam says this very strongly is, yasya alpa buddhi kunape tritha duge sodhi kalatra adishu bhauma ijyadi yatirtha buddhi salilena karhijil janeshu abhijneshu sa eva khokhara. That is how Srimad Bhagavatam says about that. One who has identified with the body, he is a donkey, he says. Bhagavatam says that he is nothing but a donkey. Donkey or ass or a cow, you can say like that. Because they don't know anything else except their body, isn't it? 24 hours maintaining the body, that's all. So because of this, kunape tridha duge, this body according to Ayurvedam has got, it's like a bag, and tridhadu, vadam, air, bile and mucus, vada, pitam and kapham. 3 things in this body. So one who identifies with those 3 things as himself, Narada Muni says to Vedavyas, swadhi kalatradishu bhauma ijyadim, that one who has born in a particular place in this world, he identifies with that very strongly, thinks that I am Indian, I am Australian, I am American, I am European, I am white, I am black. This kind of identification. Where does this come from? This comes from this bodily consciousness, isn't it? Yasya alpa buddhi kunape tritha duge sodhi kalatra adishu bhauma ijyadim. One who identifies with one's own family very strongly, thinking that this is my family, everything else doesn't matter, this is what it matters to me. Sodhi kalatra adishu bhauma ijyadim yatirtha buddhi salilena karhichil. When one goes to holy rivers to bathe, you find in the many of the Puranas description of the bathing in so many holy rivers. Why? Because bathing in these rivers purifies oneself. Many, many great devotees, they go and bathe in these rivers. When they bathe in those rivers get purified. When we go and bathe in those rivers, we pollute them. So our duty is to pollute them, and the saints go and purify them. But for us to purify, that is necessary. That is why all these holy rivers are mentioned in the Puranas very strongly. There is a number of rivers mentioned, starting with Ganga River. So from there everything begins, and so on and so forth. So whatever it is, yatya salilena karhijil, yatirtha buddhi salilena karhijil. When one goes to bathe in those rivers, he simply thinks that I have to get rid of my sinful life, that's why I'm bathing. And one says, I bathe myself and I'm finished, I'm going, he says, that's it. There are people like that. They go to bathe in different rivers. They don't care for anything else in this world. They have no understanding, philosophical understanding of Krishna consciousness. Simply going to bathe like an animal, they go and bathe in the river and come back and says, I bathe in this river, I bathe in that river. Okay, that will purify you, but at the same time, Vedavyasa Maharshi is saying that is not the goal of bathing. Because when you go to bathe in those rivers, you have to find out great personalities who come to bathe there and take their association. Yatirtha buddhi salilena karhichil. That when he sees tirtha buddhi in the river alone, without considering about associating with devotees, janeshu abhinyeshu. That such people are considered to be sa eva ghokhara. That they are all considered to be cows and asses. They are not better than that. So why is it mentioned like that? Because of this reason only. That instead of taking that, one should take the association of the devotees. That, but eating and sleeping activities, they have to be restricted and they have to be regulated.
Yukta ahara viharasya, yukta nyashvasya karmasu, yukta sotnavabhodasya, yogo bhavati dukkaham.
Then, by externally, if you look at a person, one who is materially absorbed and one who is practicing yoga system, you won't find not a big difference externally in his activities. But at the same time, internally, that you will notice that the yogi's activities are different. Yogi is more restricted and controlled and very focused in his life. He is able to control his mind and senses strongly. Restricted eating, restricted sleeping, and also restricted activities. And always very intense and focused in his spiritual activities. This is a yogi. In due course, yukta sotnava bhodasya yoga obhavadi dukaha. He will cross over his distress in this world. Yada vinyaram chittam almanye avarishtade nuspruha sarvagamebhyo yuktamitya achyude tada. Then, once the mind is freed from all kinds of desires and fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, then mind, although the tendency is to go into sense enjoyment, to different sense objects, as long as it is not absorbed in Krishna, it will still have that tendency to do that. So therefore, one has to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Then, yadā rīvo nivādasto nengade sovama asprada yogino yarajitasya yunjado yogama almanāham. That Krishna says here, an example, one whose mind has come under such control, what will happen? It will be like a lamp which is burning, whose the flame is not flickering anymore. Like a flame which is not flickering, in the same way his mind will be situated. That all the other objects, that it will become so stable and free from any other movements. And not only that, because the false ego goes away from there, from his heart. Because when one comes to this stage by now, in whichever yoga system if you follow, whether you follow the Jnana Margam or Bhakti Margam or the Ashtanga Yogam, whichever it is, if you have reached this stage, by this time, most of the false ego also would have gone from the person who is practicing it. Because false ego is like a cover on ourself, on the soul. And that false ego, which is covering us all the time, is not allowing us to the bliss to manifest in the consciousness. The false ego identifies with the body. But by now, you have crossed over that stage and come to a freedom, a state of freedom, where you are freed from the false ego, where you are freed from the false ego, that you can now see the power of the soul which is manifesting within.
Yatro uparamade chittam niruddham yoga sevaya yatra jaivalpan atmanam pashyannalpani dushyadim.
That in order to pull the mind from all kinds of fruitive activities, and when it is properly controlled and fixed upon Krishna, in Krishna's service, on Krishna consciousness activities, then it starts enjoying there. That enjoyment has to come from Krishna consciousness. As long as that happiness is not coming, then enjoyment is not happening from Krishna consciousness, the tendency of the mind is to fall back again into its own material happiness. That when it has come to the permanently to the state of Krishna consciousness, then it is satisfied. It doesn't require any more happiness from external world.
Sukhamatyandigam yatal buddhigrahyamati indriyam vetiyatrana jayvayam siddhas chaladi ratvadam.
That a person whose mind is absorbed in that kind of transcendental happiness, it does not know anything else. It does not move anymore from that position. And not only that, because it is absorbed in Krishna to such an extent that it realizes its true identity.
Yam ladhva jabaram labham manyadena adhigam tada yasmin sthito na dukhena guruna api vichalyade tam vidhya dukha samyoga viyogam yogasam idam sanishchayena yoktavyo yogo nirvinna chetasa.
That by yam ladhva jabaram labham manyadena adhigam tada, that by receiving that transcendental knowledge, which is the transcendental knowledge, it is that knowledge by receipt of which one does not feel any more desire in this material world. That is pure transcendental knowledge. Because the symptom of a person who has acquired spiritual knowledge is he has freed himself from all material desires. There were no more desires coming back to him. Why desires are coming? Because there is no knowledge inside. Transcendental knowledge is not there. So when Krishna says here, yam ladhva, yam ladhva chabaram labham manyadena adhigam tada yasmin sthito na dukhena guruna api vichalyade, that once you have crossed that stage and came to the perfect transcendental position, then even the greatest distress in this material world will not disturb you. That is the nature of that consciousness. Or spiritual consciousness is such, when one has reached that state, nothing can touch you. No distress will come to you. Because why? Because knowledge has taken control of you then. At the moment, you are controlled by emotions and the feelings of this world and the social regulations and the society's rules and things like that. This is what make you to feel happy or unhappy or distressed, whatever it is. But when one is fixed in transcendental knowledge, Krishna says, yam labdho ajabiram labham manyadena adhigam tada yasmin sthitau na dukhena guruna api vichalyade. That is the beauty of transcendental knowledge, Krishna says. That he realizes himself, his own identity in relationship with Krishna. Where is the doubts then after that? Because once you have experienced something, then nobody else has to convince you about it. So, tam vidhya dukha samyoga viyogam yogasam idam sanishayena yogavyam yoktavyam yoga onurvinna chetasaham. That by tatuvijaya means by constantly reflecting on the nature of the soul. That is why what Bhagavad Gita does. Bhagavad Gita stimulates a person's thoughts in the spiritual direction. It drives you in the spiritual direction. And if a person who is very thoughtful and he is able to think in that way all the time, spend his energy in analyzing the nature of the soul and constantly being aware that we are spirit soul and not the material body, and if that relationship is strongly established in oneself by this process of reflection, or what is known as the contemplation of the truth, in that way, if he practices that, one process is that. Secondly, by studying the spiritual literature, like Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, other Upanishads, Mahabharatam, all these things helps a person to get to that stage. And more than that, continuous practice of it. Continuously practicing to be situated in that. And in that way, one goes on doing it, then in due course, he has to come to that stage of realization. That great, great acharyas and great devotees, that is what they advise the person to do. that, but Krishna has explained a little bit in detail in the next few verses.
Sangalpa prabhavan kamam tektva sarvan asheshada manasai indriyagramam viniyamya samandadaham shanai shanai rubaramail buddhya vdhriti grihidaya alma samstam manakritva na kinjit abhijindayel.
That in the mind, continuously there will be a flow of desires coming, one after the other. Not only desires, all the other vasanas or propensities from the karma. Karma vasanas which are inside will start manifesting according to the association with the modes of nature. So normally, conditioned soul, like all of us, when we are associating with the external world according to the modes of nature, our desires will start coming out from inside. Similarly, our vasanas also. Vasanas means this propensity is inside. They will start coming out.
Normal tendency is
to act according to that desire, isn't it? When the mind tells us something to do, we immediately jump into action. That is the nature of this. But Krishna says here that this nature of the mind, where is this coming from? It is the way Maya plays with our mind. That's the way Maya controls us. Maya knows what is our weakness. Our weakness is that we can't fight against the mind. The mind is controlling us and Maya controls the mind. So in other words, Maya controls the conditioned soul through this agency called mind. You will find all kinds of statements about how to control the mind. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati used to say that you have to beat your mind 100 times in the morning when you get up. Take a shoe and start beating him, he says. But you don't know where he is even to beat. This is the problem. But so, see how the difficulty it is. That even if you know where the enemy is, you can fight with him. But you don't know where the enemy is, but he is there. This is the situation with the mind. So in order to, just to stress the point, that don't get driven by the mind. This is what the whole spiritual life is all about. If you fall, generally when they want to get up in the morning, often you find people complaining that this is one of the biggest problems, particularly in the Western world. Because here, because the sun is also take its own time to come out, so people also think, I live according to the nature. So when the sun comes out in the winter at 10 o'clock, we also get up at 10. So this is a difficulty. So therefore it becomes a big problem. So we say that to get up in the morning, when we want to get up, the mind says to you, why you want to get up now? See, everybody is sleeping comfortably. Why? What is wrong with you that you have to get up in the morning when everyone else is sleeping comfortably? So especially weekend, what a heaven. So this way, the thoughts are coming back. Who is doing all this? The mind is doing it. So one has to become strong enough not to get surrendered to that mind, that pushing you to act like this. Because that time in the morning hours, which as Krishna has given to us, when everything else is sleeping, Krishna says you continue your spiritual activity. That's the time for that. So in similar ways, in many things, it is actually the mind that controls us. Mind engages us in different social activities, social interactions. We feel commitment to so many things in this world. I have this commitment, that commitment. If I don't do that, what will they think about me? Or what will the society will think about me? All kinds of illusory ideas working in the head. And then you start acting on that. That is, mind is dictating to you at that time what to do. So who is controlling the mind? Maya is controlling the mind. Maya and mind are very close related. It is, they are very work together actually. And you helplessly stand in the middle and not knowing which way to turn. This side is Maya, that side is mind. And from both sides you are pulled in all directions. Then, but one day Maya will stop this game. When will that be? When will Maya stop that game? When you start your spiritual life, in the beginning you will find this pull a lot from both directions. Maya will pull and the mind also will pull. But one day, Sarubhanusandhanam hi bhaktirityamhidiyade. When bhakti, devotion to Krishna builds up inside strongly, and that realization that the only goal of life is developing Krishna consciousness, if that is fixed up, then mind or Maya cannot touch you after that. That is the way it works. In every great personality, very, very great personalities, they also had to go through this process. It is not that when they were born with all mind under control. They also spend their time in life, engaged in spiritual life seriously, very intensely, that one day the mind came under control. Not only the mind, why? Because they stopped the game with the Maya. They stopped, they said to Maya, that we will not, I will not be, have the time to do. That is their strength of mind, which they have developed by the process of Krishna consciousness. Through Krishna consciousness, they strengthen their mind to such an extent that they are able to tell back, turn back and say to the Maya that I have nothing to do with you anymore. That stage will come in spiritual life when one is absorbed in that way. Because one of the reasons is this, where does mind play its game? Mind doesn't play on the gross body. This is the most difficulty. You see, we have a gross world where we exist, which is the external world, isn't it? This is called the sthula prapancham. Prapancham means this manifestation, external world. That's called the sthula prapancham. Though the gross body, the senses, they all act in this gross world or sthula prapancham. It is called the gross world, where everything is gross, perceivable by the senses. Where does the mind act? Mind doesn't act in the gross world. It acts in the subtle world. So sushma prapancham or the subtle world, that is where the mind is acting. And that's why you're not able to get him. Because if it is in the gross world, you could have done something about it. But if it is, because it is in the subtle world, you have no capacity to get him.
Sangalpa prabhavan kamam tetva sarvana sheshada manasai indriya gramam viniyamya samantada shanai shanai rubaramil buddhya dhradikrihidaya almasamstam manakritva nakinjidabhijindayel.
So, pranayama, as I mentioned before, is one process of controlling the mind. Another process is by constantly reflecting from the knowledge, from the Upanishads, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam and all. And thirdly, by the spiritual master may instruct a disciple a certain way of controlling the mind. Because sometimes spiritual masters who are very capable, they will be able to understand the mind of a disciple and able to instruct him properly how to get his mind under control. These are all part of the spiritual process. And whatever it may be, one has to learn to control this continuous flow of desires coming in. But the mind, although you do not know where it is, many people agree that it is in the heart, but somehow or the other, its presence is experienced all over the body, isn't it? That that there is a huge difference between the senses and the mind. That senses just does what it's been told to do. So you can't blame the senses too much, isn't it? After all, what does the senses do? Senses does it only after the mind has given the signal to go and do it. Afterwards, always the sense is not on its own, engages in a sense gratification. So, what the important thing is, not to pad the mind too much, not to allow the mind to go in its own direction. That, and when the mind is controlled, there is no need to control the senses. Senses will come automatically under control. That once the mind and the senses have come properly under control, then the spiritual knowledge will start manifesting properly. Its effect will start experiencing. Today what's happening is, we study the books and we get some understanding from the book, some spiritual knowledge. We understand a theoretical understanding of it. And then we realize that although I have studied all these books, nothing has changed in me. Why is that? Because that knowledge what you have acquired, it is only staying here. It has not started affecting the consciousness yet. So intellectually you have understood certain things, but it has not started manifesting in your consciousness. So the difference between, for example, when you go to university and study certain things, what is required is, you absorb to some extent, but to a large extent, if you acquire that knowledge to get it onto a answer paper in the examination, that is sufficient. And there is no change of consciousness has to happen from that. Technology or any other subject, material subjects are like that, isn't it? They are all in relationship with the intelligence. Use your intelligence and learn the system process and learn how to apply it into all the other problems, and that solves the the intellectual knowledge has come to you. But when it comes to spiritual knowledge, you have to go a step beyond than that. What has come through intelligence to you, it has to manifest in your consciousness and change your way of thinking. Spiritual way of life has to come in and start affecting you. In order that to happen, the mind has to be pulled into it. That is the most important thing. That once one has come the mind under control, then all the spiritual knowledge will also start showing its potency there. But as long as the mind is not under control, no matter how much spiritual knowledge you acquired from Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavadam, all those things will not start showing its potency, or will not start showing its power in you. Power, or in other words, it has not influenced you to the extent it should. So this is how the spiritual knowledge works. That is the difference between the material knowledge and spiritual knowledge. That although it is a lot of effort and required energy required, that is why people spend all their lifetime in spiritual life, so that by the time of leaving the body, they reach a state of consciousness to freed from the material existence.
Yado yado nischarati manaschanjalam asthiram tadastado niyammeda tadalmanyevasham mail.
That however hard you try to control the mind, still you will be convinced that you cannot control it. Everybody has to agree with that. No one can say it's not right.
This statement in the Bhagavad Gita is like that. Yado yado nischarati manaschanjalam asthiram. Manam is chanjalam.
It is always it's always shaking. It cannot be controlled. What to talk about ordinary people? In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are certain personalities. Not ordinary people like us. Some very, very great personalities. They have tried to control their mind. And every single one of them failed. They all fail at the end. Let's start with one personality, Akrura. Look at Akrura's life. Akrura was Krishna's uncle, isn't it? This Akrura, what he did was,
if you read in the Bhagavatam, you will find Akrura was going to see Krishna in Vrindavanam.
When he was going to see Krishna, his mind was thinking like this: when will I see Krishna? How did this opportunity I get? What have I done to get to this stage? So many nice things Akrura has spoken about Krishna while going to see him in Vrindavanam. He was traveling from Madhura to Vrindavanam. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it has been discussed in length about Akrura's journey to Vrindavanam. Anyone can read it and enjoy that also. And Akrura's mind was so much absorbed in Krishna that even he forgotten the route how to get to Vrindavanam, a distance of 10 miles or so from Mathura to Vrindavanam. Even that, he got lost in that. Anyway, he got to Vrindavanam, and if you see the description of Akrura's devotion to Krishna there, you can see that he is such a great personality that continuously crying, seeing Krishna and the pleasure he was deriving from them, from that, and at the same time cursing himself how he had to serve Kamsa. Under him, he had to engage himself. So many things there. And Akrura's famous glorification of Krishna in the Bhagavatam known as Akrura Stuti. All these things are there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And later on, you'll find that when they moved to Dwaraka from Mathura, when they all moved to Dwaraka, Akrura was also in Dwaraka, living in Dwaraka and in Krishna's association. And Krishna had always a lot of respect for Akrura, because Akrura was the only devotee who was working under Kamsa. And this Akrura came to take Krishna and Balaram to Mathura before Kamsa was killed, isn't it? And that day, when Akrura took Krishna and Balaram to Mathura, Akrura invited Krishna and Balaram home. And Krishna and Balaram said to Akrura that I'll come after Kamsa is killed. When Kamsa was killed, Krishna kept his word and went to Akrura's house and accepted his invitation. And at home, Akrura gave a wonderful reception to Krishna. Not only that, Krishna engaged Akrura in finding out the welfare of the whole family by sending him to go to Hastinapur and to inquire about the Pandavas. So many things Krishna has engaged Akrura in. And Akrura was such a nice personality, a devotee, that he knew nothing but Krishna. Everything is known to Akrura like this. In spite of all that, what happened to Akrura? One day, he suddenly thought in his mind, let me have some fun with Sharadanya. This Satyabhama, Krishna's wife, who was the daughter of Satrajit, was to be married to Sharadanya. Satrajit promised Sharadanya, I will marry my daughter to you. He has promised Sharadanya to marry Satyabhama to him. But during the time when Krishna was there, Satyabhama wanted to get married to Krishna, and Krishna wanted to marry Satyabhama as well. So the things happened in such a way that Krishna married Satyabhama. So Satrajit did not keep his word of giving Satyabhama in marriage to Sharadanya. And the Sharadanya was a friend of Akrura. So also Kridavarma, who is the commander-in-chief of the Yadavas there at that time, he was also a friend of Akrura. So these three personalities met together one day, and they were joking each other when seeing the plight of Sharadanya, that he couldn't marry Satyabhama. So jokingly, our Akrura said to him what are you waiting for now? He said to Sharadanya, that look at Satrajit, what has happened to him. Look at Satrajit's brother. Satrajit's brother, if you remember the story, there was Prasena, Satrajit's brother, who went to the forest wearing the Samantaka jewel. He got killed in the forest and he never returned. And later on, Satrajit made a complaint about this incident and started accusing Krishna as responsible for that. It is in the Bhagavatam, a long story. But what has happened was, at the end, Satrajit was killed by Sharadanya. How did that happen? Because at that point, while joking, Akrura just thought that if Sharadanya has done this to you, why do you let him live in this world? You should sort it out with him, he said. This was the word Akrura used. Akrura spoke only in a joking way. He never meant that. But at that particular point, Akrura lost his mind. In other words, the mind which was focused on Krishna has come to Maya suddenly for a few minutes. And in that process, he told Sharadanya that you should not allow him to... Akrura never thought that Sharadanya will take it very seriously. He thought that he will know that he was joking. That is what Akrura was thinking. But what has happened was, that very evening, Sharadanya thought in his mind that Akrura meant that I should go and kill him, and took it upon himself, went and killed Satrajit that evening. So if a devotee of Akrura's nature can lose also the control of the mind by some reason, it can happen to anybody, isn't it? So that is one incident there. Secondly, there is a great sage in the Vedic disciplic succession known as Vishwamitra. This Vishwamitra's case is so well known that a very powerful sage, son of Gadhi was a great sage, his son was Vishwamitra. Throughout Ramayanam you will find Vishwamitra, a great personality who took Ramachandra and Lakshmana and got them married in Mithila. All this was Vishwamitra who has done that. And due to his austerities and penances, he became very powerful. And everyone knew how powerful he was, Vishwamitra was. So what did Vishwamitra do? Vishwamitra was engaged in such severe austerities and penances. They gave him the title as Rajarshi. Rajarshi means he was a king before. He became a sage, so he became Rajarshi, or Rajarshi as he is called. When he got this title, he says to the Brahma, I'm not satisfied with this. He says, such a determined personality he was. So he started more penances after that. And then they gave him another title called Brahma Rishi. That means, in other words, he has realized Brahman. So to that stage he has reached. So he is called Brahma Rishi. After that, he says, I'm not satisfied now. he wants to go further in his spiritual position. So there are certain Vedic mantras which comes through him. In other words, he is the Rishi who has invented, through him these Vedic mantras were revealed. Some of the Vedic hymns have revealed through Vishwamitra Rishi. So when you chant those mantras, you have to first meditate on the sage who has revealed those mantras to you. That is the process. So in natural way, Vishwamitra got that position there. While chanting those mantras, you will always find in the thousand names of Vishnu also you will find Vishwamitra's name mentioned in the beginning because of this. So like this, a very great personality, this Vishwamitra. So Vishwamitra was performing penances in the forest. So one day Indra thought, what is he after now? Is he after my position? That fear developed in Indra's heart. So what did Indra do? Indra sent one of the beautiful girls from the heavenly planets to disturb Vishwamitra. Normally Vishwamitra would not have fallen for anything like that. Would have had the sense to get over it. But unfortunately, Vishwamitra was sitting in meditation. Menaka arrived there and started the dancing and singing. And then what happened? Menaka had a baby, that's all. That's all it happened. So nothing else. Vishwamitra lost all the meditation, austerities, everything finished in 1 second. Menaka left the baby there and went away. Shakuntala was born. And Kanu Maharshi looked after the baby. Dushyanta married her later. All that is later story. But what I'm trying to say is that if Vishwamitra can fall, lose his control on the mind, a person who has reached that state of success in spiritual life, what about us? Number two. Another personality in the Bhagavatam, a very, very well-known personality. Because why? Krishna quotes him when he wanted to speak to Uddhava. That is how great that personality is. And this personality, Ailan, he is called as Aila. He has got a few names in the Srimad Bhagavatam. He has been given a few names. And what has happened to him was that he controlled all the planets very nicely. And he comes in the lunar dynasty, Krishna's dynasty. His name is Pururavas. This Pururavas was a personality whose success in the Srimad Bhagavatam is considered to be one of the topmost stories which Krishna has quoted in relationship with him to Uddhava. What was Pururava's problem? Pururavas once went to Indraloka to see Lord Indra. When he went there, he had gone for some meeting, some discussion of something about the war or whatever that was. Pururavas was such a personality. But when he got there, in the Indra's assembly, he saw Urvashi dancing there. And when he saw Urvashi, that Pururava's mind lost control. Pururava fell for Urvashi. And then after that, maybe up to that, I don't know what Pururava was chanting up to that time. After that, what Pururava was chanting was Urvashi, Urvashi, Urvashi. This was what Pururava was chanting after that. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna says this, that Pururava was chanting this holy name of Urvashi from then on. Krishna has explicitly put there that. So he started chanting this Urvashi. And Urvashi was, at that time, going through a hard time in the heavenly planets. What was her hard time? She offended some great sage, and the sage told her, you go to the earthly planet and live there for some time. That was the punishment. Coming to this world was a punishment. In the heavenly planets, that is how it is. We are thinking living here is very superior, but they are thinking this is like a hellish planet. We are sent here to come here. So our Urvashi was waiting for an opportunity to, she had to come here. There was no choice. So instead of coming and taking birth in some poor family or where there is not much chance of enjoyment, Urvashi was thinking that why not go and see this Pururavas, see what it's like. After all, he also is is happy with me. It looks like that. So, in order to please Puruvas, Urvashi came here. Urvashi came to this world, spent some time here. And that story of Puruvas, if you read in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is no other pathetic story than that. It is so unfortunate that Puruvas says there that he did not know how the days and nights were coming and going. In other words, he didn't know when the sun was rising, sun was setting. He was so much absorbed in Urvashi. Like we are talking about absorbing in Krishna. And Puruvas was absorbed in Urvashi to that extent. And years and years has gone like that. Many, many years. Almost a lot of his lifetime was spent in that way. Enjoying with Urvashi in this world. And Urvashi was not an ordinary personality. She had come from Narayana Maharshi's thighs. When Markandeya Rishi was disturbed by Maya, was going to be disturbed by Maya, and Markandeya Maharshi won over Maya, but Markandeya Maharshi succeeded in controlling Maya because of the control of the mind. He was able to win over Maya. That time Narayana Rishi was going to be disturbed by Indra. Indra sent so many apsaras women to disturb Narayana Maharshi's Narayana Maharshi is Krishna himself. Narayana Maharshi's meditation, Indra wanted to disturb. So Indra sent a lot of women to disturb Narayana Maharshi. Narayana Maharshi was not disturbed. Narayana Maharshi was not disturbed. On the other hand, from his meditation, when he opened his eyes, he saw all these apsaras women from the heavenly planet standing in front of him. He asked them, "What for have you come?" He said. They got frightened because they knew. You see, this mission is not an easy mission. When they come here, when the girls from the heavenly planets come here, Indra tells them, "What's the mission?" They come here. But they know if they don't succeed in that, there is a possibility that the sage whom they have come to disturb may curse them. And if they curse, they have to become a stone or a tree or another body they will have to accept and stay for thousands of years till they get released from that curse. So this is a frightening situation for them. But in order to please Indra, they come to do this. They are kept there only for this purpose. This is their job. That any sage getting involved in serious intense penances or worried, Indra is worried all the time about his position. So Narayana Maharshi was not disturbed. He opened his eyes. As soon as they opened their eyes, all these girls paid their obeisances to him and said that we were sent by Indra. We are sorry that we have disturbed your meditation. We are going back. Because they wanted to leave without disturbing, without hurting, upsetting him. But Narayana Maharshi said to them, "It's very nice to see you all. You are so beautiful. But I'll give you another. You must have come here on Indra's request, isn't it? Now do one thing while going back. Take this girl also with you." And beaten his thighs, and from there Urvashi was born. So Urvashi was given to Indra by Narayana Maharshi as a gift. And all the apsaras women took Urvashi with them. And Urvashi was more beautiful than any of these apsaras women who came from the heavenly planets. It is that Urvashi which was sent here to who came here to live with Puruvas. So when she came to live with Puruvas, you can imagine Puruvas' position. Normally, to marry a girl from heavenly planets and all is beyond the imagination of the human species. Human species have to be satisfied with whatever beauty is available in this world. You have a limit also there. Krishna says that's it, that's what you can have it. But when you get married to someone from the heavenly planets, that means you are somewhat superior. Otherwise, they won't easily accept you. For them, the men in this world are just like worms. That's how they consider. Particularly the higher species, the Gandharvas, the Kinnaras, the Charanas, all these great personal Siddhas, all of them, they think material human body is nothing but somewhat a species enough to suffer in this earthly planet. That's all it's capable of. The capacity is also limited, as you know. That in some instances you can read that in the Bhagavatam also. So when Urvashi spent some time here, Puruvas was in absolute bliss at that time. You should have seen Puruvas at that time. Puruvas was in such an ecstasy that he has forgotten everything in this world. after many, many years, one day Urvashi's time was over. She had come here only to finish up her the punishment, what she was given to her, the term, time, to finish the time. So she has finished the time, and she didn't want to stay here one second more. She realized that this place is no good at all compared to the facilities what she had in the heavenly planet. There it was continuously its enjoyment and association with great personalities, all that. So Purvashi went back one day. And when Urvashi went back, you should have seen Puryavas at that time, about his life. And Puryavas was going here, there, everywhere, always weeping. And eventually, one day, Puryavas came to his senses. It says in the Bhagavatam like that. Who gave that? Krishna gave him that senses. To come to his real sense. What is that? That this human body is a rare thing to get. You do not know when you will get it again. Today you got it, but next time when you will have it, you do not know which direction you will go, where the next life will be. So having got a human body, I have wasted all my life in simply thinking about Urvashi. And when that thought came very strongly to Puryavas' mind, he took a decision that this is it. I am not interested anymore in any of this happiness in this world, or from the spiritual, in the heavenly planets. And he gave up everything, walked out from the palace, and performed penances and austerities, absorbed in the thoughts of Krishna, went back to the spiritual world. Krishna gives him a great, admiration for this personality, Puryavas. And Puryavas spoke a few verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is known as Ailagida. Ailagida means that song what Puryavas has spoken at the time of leaving this world. Instructions to all the people whom he was ruling. He is telling them about the importance of spiritual life. Improve your association. This is what he meant there. So that you don't fall back into ignorance. This is what the message from Puryavas is. So you can see how Puryavas, a great personality, how his mind fell at one point. And once the mind loses, when it will come back to control again, you never know that. You can never say that. So this is the nature of the mind. It has happened to Akrura, it has happened to Puryavas, it has happened to Vishwamitra. These are all personalities in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It has happened to Chitragedu, a great king. The same thing has happened to Chitragedu also. So like this, all these personalities in the Bhagavatam are coming and telling us that this is the way you have to take care of your own spiritual life, not to be pulled by the mind at any time. Okay, these are all ordinary personalities, isn't it? They are all ordinary, means they are higher than the human species, but they are still part of the jivas. Let us take the example of Lord Shiva now. Lord Shiva is known himself as, if you see Lord Shiva in meditation form, you will find him as though he is sitting like a pillar. He sits like that, without moving any time. He can sit like that for months and months together, probably years even. That is how stable he is in his mind. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 8th canto, there is a discussion of the Mohini form of Krishna. When Lord Shiva saw that form, Lord Shiva heard about this from Sri Narada Maharshi. Narada Maharshi came and told Lord Shiva that Krishna has taken a female form, he says to Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva was surprised that Krishna has taken a female form. I have never seen that, he said to Narada Muni. Narada Muni says to him, go and have a look at it, what it's like, he says. It'll be interesting to see how Krishna is when he's dressed up like in Radharani, isn't it? So all the Lord Shiva said to Sri Parvati, I have heard this from Narada Muni, I would like to see that form. Sri Parvati also says to Lord Shiva, I would also like to see that when Krishna is dressed up like in the female form. So Lord Shiva, Sri Parvati, the two sons, Ganesh and Kartikeya, all four of them traveled from Kailas to Vaikuntha to see Krishna there. When they got there, Krishna suddenly saw the whole family coming unexpectedly. There was no prior intimation, no appointment was fixed or anything like that. They arrived there. Krishna say, welcome them very nicely, invite, call Mahalakshmi also, and told them that Lord Shiva has come, and received them nicely, and asked very politely what was the purpose of the visit. Lord Shiva said to Krishna at that time, I heard that an incident happened like this, that you had to take Mohini's form, and you managed to get the nectar out of the demons and hand them over to the demigods, because that was a big thing in the history, isn't it? It is during that churning of the milk ocean, the nectar came, and it is with that nectar that the demigods got back their life, and that is how Krishna fulfilled the desire of the Aditi Devi. All that story is in the 8th canto, you can read in the Bhagavatam. So when Lord Shiva saw Mohini, Lord Shiva came there, Krishna has already given up that old dress and got back to his usual form. Krishna says to Lord Shiva that there is no need it was nothing important, he said. Krishna put it very lightheartedly. Krishna said like this to Lord Shiva, I had to do some dressing up because I had to show baffle the demons in order to get the nectar pot from there. And as soon as Krishna took that Mohini Murti, in the Bhagavatam you can read, Mahabali was the leader of the demons. And this Mahabali was, after seeing that form, didn't want any nectar after that. All I want is Mohini Murti, he says. He says, and the way he says to Mohini is like this. He says to Mohini that we are very fortunate that you have come to serve us this nectar, which you have got from the ocean of milk, from churning the ocean of milk. We will all sit nicely, so you can start serving us. Mohini says to Mahabali, I am not used to doing all these kind of services. Mohini was very blunt, and don't trust me, I am a woman, she says. First, Mohini said this to Mahabali, one thing. Secondly, Mohini says to Mahabali, that this is nectar, and if I take nectar, first thing what I do is I drink myself some nectar before I give it to anybody. And on one row, Mahabali and all the demons were sitting. On the opposite side, the demigods were sitting. They are all lost their youth. You have to remember that. In that story, the incident what happened was, demigods have all lost their energy. They were all like 80, 90 years old in that age group, you can say. All of them were coughing all the time. Some of them were more or less like the life support machine. More or less to that stage, they have reached that stage. They were in that condition. And they were sitting on the other side. And demons are saying, they were all very youthful because they have put these demigods into that state, isn't it? So demons were very youthful and strong, and the demigods were in this miserable state. And you know, the demons also told Mohini Murti, we won't eat with these people because they are all sick. Our aristocratic position don't allow us to eat with these demigods. That is what they were saying to Mohini Murti. Mohini says to them, pacifying them, don't worry, sit down. I'll serve the nectar, you all will be okay. Mohini was saying all these things. And Mahabali kept on looking at Mohini to such an extent, saying to her that after serving this nectar, you may select any one of us, whomever you feel is you are pleased with, to marry and get settled in life. Mahabali's request to Mohini Murti. What was Mahabali thinking? Mahabali is thinking, I am the leader of this whole group. So if she wants to marry, naturally she will marry me. Who else she will marry? This was going through Mahabali's head. So Mahabali was saying all these things to Mohini. And Mohini was thinking, in the Bhagavatam, if you read, you will find there a few glimpses from Mohini's eyes, and a little smile was enough. They all fell into that. That was it. No one could do anything after that. They kept looking at Mohini like this. They couldn't take her eyes off Mohini, because Krishna has mesmerized them through that pastime. So anyway, in the Bhagavatam you will find later all this. Now, Narada Maharshi heard this and told Lord Shiva, and he had come to see this. So when he came to see that, Krishna was not willing to dress up again like that. Lord Shiva says to Krishna, I just want to see that form, he said. Krishna was trying to be evasive, to avoid that. Krishna says to Shiva, Lord Shiva, if you see that form, it may disturb your mind. He said, it may disturb your mind. He says to Lord Shiva like that. So, what has happened was that Krishna says at that time to Lord Shiva, normally, but you are a great personality. You have got, not only that, Lord Shiva says, Sri Parvati is with me and the children also. There is no question of me getting affected by that. So, he was taking all precautions from every side so that he doesn't get victimized by that. Within a few minutes, the whole scene changed. All Krishna, Lord Shiva could see was that Mohini Murti with a nice ball in the hand, playing the ball and running in the field. And Lord Shiva has forgotten, Sri Parvati was with him, Ganesh was with him, Kartikeya was with him, completely forgotten the whole scene and started running after her. And ran for all the three planets, systems they ran, chasing Mohini, that form of Mohini. And you know in Bhagavatam what happened afterwards, that Lord Shiva's, never once Lord Shiva felt that before, upset about himself. And he says to Krishna that let this be a good lesson to me, what I have learned. So even if Lord Shiva's mind can be disturbed, what about others? So that is why Krishna says, Durjayanam aham manam. That out of all things to control, the most difficult thing is the mind. We'll discuss the mind next Saturday. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.